It is minicamp time. The beginning of the mandatory minicamp practices. The first today, pretty much getting into the books right now out in the field in Berea. Vic Carucci with Jim Donovan, who is sitting in for Nathan Zagura. And we were both out there on the practice field watching the workouts. We've got a big, big show for you, the head coach of the Browns. We will hear from Mike Pettine, we hope, in a little bit. We're not quite sure, but probably when he finishes practice, talking with the media, the assembled media downstairs, he's going to come up and talk with this media in our radio room here in our studio, the Dog Bowl in Berea. Doug Deacon from the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, the partner of one Jim Donovan, will join us at 2 p.m. We're going to do after further review. That's something we love to do on Tuesdays on this show. So we'll do that about 1:45. And then we'll take you around the National Football League with the Blitz. We'll check in on the Colin Kaepernick deal in San Francisco. We'll check in Jacksonville. So reporters who cover those respective teams, Eric Branch from the San Francisco Chronicle, Ryan O'Halloran from the Florida Times-Union, will be with us. And we're also going to have the – well, he was one of the top finishers. I guess he didn't win the whole thing. But you remember the Play the Draft contest that we had on ClevelandBrowns.com, very popular contest where people were able to basically – rank their players in order before the draft, play the amateur GM, and the player's stock would rise and fall, just like a stock in a company. So Shane Garrett, who's a math teacher at Ashland Crestview, is going to be with us. In fact, he's in studio with us now, kind of sitting around observing, but we'll have a couple of minutes to talk with Shane a little bit to ask him about playing that contest. I know he's going to have an opportunity to meet head coach Mike Pettine and kind of enjoy things here in Berea. So very happy to have Shane Garrett with us, and we congratulate him on it's not an easy thing ranking in that game. Jim Donovan, our Ohio Business Machine's hot topics of the day, the obvious topic being practice today, and you and I got to see a good portion of it out there. Give me some of your impressions.
The bigness of it is the first thing that hits me because it's just a mini camp. It's a mandatory mini camp.
Yeah.
And normally nobody's at that at all other than the guys that it's mandatory for.
Right.
But there's a bigness of it. There's a training camp feel to it. We're so far ahead in the bigness of the scope of the Browns season this year, it really is amazing. But everything is big. If it's an OTA, the crowd is bigger than you normally would expect that because the media size, the gathering of the media is bigger. And today, I mean, really, there was a training camp feel to it. I mean, they're starting to get the facility ready for training camp, and that's a lot of work to get ready in the next few weeks to get set for the end of July when camp opens up. But really, I mean, the first thing that hit me was, wow, look at the crowd here, and this is just a mini camp. So we're going to face that. Those crowds will swell in size as we start to open up the facility once training camp practices are open. Brian Hoyer, very sharp, I thought, today. That's the first thing that hit me.
Yep.
I mean, immediately. Terrence West is a big kid. He really is the running back out of Towson, and he strikes me as a guy that even when it's just touch football, which is what minicamp is, he seeks activity and he seeks contact, even in that, to the point where I don't want to see anybody get hurt. But he is, I'm trying to figure out his body size, who I can equate it to. I think he's a bigger Ray Rice. I mean, his leg size, he's very much like Rice.
He's taller than Rice.
You're right. Mm-hmm. But the thickness of his body and the thickness of his legs, he has that Ray Rice look. And, of course, if he can put together years, at least not last year for Ray Rice, but the years preceding that, I think the Browns are in a good way. So I really liked Hoyer. I thought Manziel looked pretty good, too. But Brian was very, very sharp. And I know it's very important to Brian to be good every day out. I think he realizes the temperature of the water here for him is warm, if not hot. Hot, and he's got to stay hot, and I think he's ready to do that.
Brian Hoyer's throwing the ball with more authority.
He really is, yeah.
With much more authority than we saw last year in the brief time we got to see him, and I think it's less laborious. When that ball comes out of his hand, it just seems more natural for him to put some zip on it, some zing on it, and you can see that in the individual drills. You can see them when they're throwing at bags. Literally, one of the drills that the quarterbacks do is they set up on wheels these dummies, these tall dummies that serve as receivers, and then Dowell Loggins, the quarterback's coach, moves to one side or the other, basically like a safety. The idea is that as a safety, to whatever side he's moving, you throw to the opposite dummy. And watching Hoyer throw against those, he knocked – the dummy over that he threw to multiple times. The other quarterbacks, you know, their ball either hit or ricocheted off or whatever or missed. I thought his accuracy in some of those drills and the one-on-ones looked very good. And in the team drills also looked pretty sharp as well. Johnny Manziel, yeah, I'd say he's still kind of getting there. What I noticed with him is the need to kind of tighten up mechanics. There are times when you can just see the basics of where his elbow is, like it drops at times on throws. And that's just the standard thing you look for with a young quarterback. Can he do it the same way time after time? And I think that's something that Johnny Manziel is still working on, Jim. There were times today when I saw that and I saw how the ball kind of fluttered out of there. When it was a tighter spiral, if you watched his release time and the way he brought his arm back and then let the ball go, it was, you could see everything was kind of perfect. I don't know if he has to think more about doing that because he's just not as consciously. It's not as natural.
I think you're right. I think he's thinking everything through.
He's thinking everything through. And you saw that today. That was an observation there. I thought the defense, once again, looked like picked up right where it left off, ahead of the offense, tight coverage, very hard. Those windows that these quarterbacks throw into in coverage, very tight.
Yeah. Defensively, I want to point out a couple of things here. You know, there's no question, you know, Whitner and Gibson are definitely in there as your starting safeties. But there are a couple of defensive backs who really showed and got a lot of playing time last year because of injuries and the state of the Browns defense by the end of the year. The kid Aubrey and Poyer, the two players, they both continue to make plays. Now, it was at this time last year that they came in here and they made plays.
Right.
And it earned them playing time in those preseason games. And then they made the team. You know, at one point or another, they were brought up off practice squad or made the team outright. I know that Ray Horton really liked Aubrey a great deal last year. And then they continue to make plays. Leon McFadden made a heck of a play on a long ball. Did you see that down?
Saw it.
Down the middle of the field. He got over there. He closed and made a play. And Leon had a real rough baptism into the NFL last year, which brings up this point, Vic, and that is that when you look at a player like McFadden, go back to last year, he got hurt early in training camp and he lost time. We touched a little bit on this at the end of the show yesterday. Now, Joel Bitonio is losing some time right now because he has an ankle situation and is penciled in, if not inked in, as the Browns' starting right guard. I mean, the Browns drafted him very high in the second round. They've loved what he's able to do. They love his attitude, how he plays the game with a little bit of a nasty side to him, and they want that on their offensive line. Again, now, let's watch that as training camp begins, because if rookies in particular – lose time, it just seems to be multiplied by two how much time they miss, because you just lose that one-on-one and those reps. And once you put them in the games and once those preseason games get going, I mean, you're thinking Pittsburgh opening game, who do we get ready for those games? And so you want Bitonio to get in there at the start of training camp. Now, I know they'll have 5 weeks after this week to get ready, but if that's a high ankle sprain, he'll need all of that time.
He will, and he's going to miss a lot by missing any time here, I think, because you can see today it looked like another advanced level of teaching that Coach Moeller did with the offensive linemen. There were a lot of more specific, intricate drills that they've saved for this portion of the offseason workouts that I noticed with the linemen, just hand placement, the punch drills, all those things, the steps that they take. All of that is crucial, not for Joe Thomas, it's for Joel Bitonio. But Joe Thomas and Alex Mack and all those guys are going through it. And I'll tell you something else. I think Mitchell Schwartz continues to show me something as a competitor. The conversation, the narrative all offseason was they're going to have to get better on the offensive line, especially at that tackle spot, or maybe kick him inside or whatever, because he's not a guy who could hold up at right tackle. I think, Jim, he's making a case, at least in terms of the non-contact way, but his movement, his consistency, I don't see, as you pay attention to those drills, I don't see him getting pulled aside and talked to for what he's not doing. He seems to be right in step with everyone else, seems to have in some ways reconfigured his body a little bit, dropped some weight, so he's moving. He had good mobility as a bigger man, but right now he seems to be a little leaner and moving well. And I'll tell you, I think he's going to make it hard for them to pull him out of that spot.
Well, and that's good. And Doug will have a great insight into that when Doug Deacon joins us on the show at 2 o'clock, as you say, because I know Doug focuses in on that part of it. And in particular, I think Doug's a Mitchell Schwartz fan, and he thought he got a little bit of a rough go last year, because he did get a rough go. And in the early part of the year, he could not compete. And Doug feels that that was because he had a bit of a foot injury, but played through it, but did not play well through it. But once he got, you know, healthier as the year went along, he did play steady. And I think, you know, Vic, I think that's what Mitchell Schwartz is going to be. If he's going to be anything with the Browns, he's going to be a steady right tackle. He's going to be a guy that if you walk out of the stadium, you know, at 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Sunday afternoon,
right,
you hopefully are not saying, boy, Mitchell Schwartz got eaten up. You're hopefully not saying anything, because that would mean that he just played well. You know, he didn't, you know, he didn't make great plays. He just made the play. And I think that's what he's going to be. And when I talked to Mike Patton about this about a week and a half ago and asked and threw the name Mitchell Schwartz at him, that's how he kind of answered it. Yeah, he's steady.
Steady works.
Steady works. At right tackle,
NFL,
steady
at,
works.
At right tackle.
Yeah, right.
Left tackles aren't steady.
Yeah, that's
left
right.
Tackles are the highly paid guys that have to dominate and be exceptional in pass protection. And they may not always be the Joe Thomases of the world, but they have to be at the level, either rising to that point or at least one or two Pro Bowls in their back pocket. Mitchell Schwartz may not be the guy who goes to Pro Bowls, but if he's steady, that works.
Yeah.
And we weren't sure if he was steady. And I know time and again, Doug Deacon made that point that his health may have been was used against him,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, that's the biggest reason why he didn't have that consistency. But I'm going to add this, too.
Yeah.
The previous administration of this team, I'm talking specifically Joe Banner, Michael Lombardi, were predisposed to not like his talent. They didn't have anything against him personally, but they didn't love the pick. They hated the pick.
The
second round pick
high second
on,
round.
On Mitchell Schwartz,
high second round.
They thought was not a good pick for this team. So he was fighting an uphill battle against that regime. And of course, they're not here anymore. Maybe Ray Farmer a little more open-minded with how he's looking at him and as a player. But, you know, you brought up Poyer and Aubrey. And I think the other thing to bring up with those two is the special teams contribution they can make. Chris Tabor is absolutely looking forward to that gunner, because he has two of the best in the league, frankly, in Johnson Bademosi and Buster Skrine. They are two exceptional gunners. So Skrine, you're going to presume, is going to see a fair amount of time playing defensive back, and he's going to be on the field. Bademosi will be involved in that, but you got to find other people. And I think this is where it'll be competitive for Aubrey to get into the mix or Poyer.
Yeah, and that's how they did it last year, you're right.
Yeah.
And there's a case of two guys who won spots and a lot of recognition through preseason game action, fourth quarter of preseason games, which is normally stadiums are empty, and guys are coming out there who are undrafted free agents, and they're just trying to catch somebody's eye. I want to point out, Vic, Anthony Armstrong, interesting guy, wide receiver, Kyle Shanahan guy, right?
Two years with the Redskins.
Trying to come back here now. Made some nice plays today. And the other kid that I really enjoyed watching, and, you know, it's the rookie linebacker from Iowa. I thought he's really,
Kirksey has soaked
up a lot. Kirksey is really playing well and almost looks like a leader out there. He's kind of positioning people the right way, which means to me he gets it. You know, he understands it.
I'll say this about Kirksey. Not only is he on his own making a contribution and looking like the athlete, the long, tall, long-armed guy who can defend passes, all that they wanted when they scouted him, he's pushing Craig Robertson. I see Craig Robertson stepping his game up. Now, I think there's a max talent that Craig Robertson has that's probably not going to be good enough for him to be a starter on this team and maybe a starter anywhere in the NFL. But there's a noticeable difference in how he's trying to play. There are limitations he has physically, athletically, but when I watched him, especially today, and what I saw him at the tail end of the workouts last week, I say, you know what, this guy knows Chris Kirksey's here. He knows they drafted that guy to replace him, and he's trying to do everything he can to fend him off. And I'll say this, Robertson could, speaking of special teams, Robertson could be another guy to make his case, because in those rare instances where you can get somebody with a little level of experience to play for you, because normally the salary cap squeezes those guys off your roster. That's the business of football that a lot of people don't understand. A Craig Robertson, if somehow he's able to survive and isn't starting and Kirksey is, you could slide him into special teams.
Boy, I'll tell you what, look at how the Browns roster has changed. Opening day 2 years ago, Philadelphia in town to play the Browns. The Browns are in a 3-4 defense at that point, right, with Dick Chiron.
They were
in a 4-3, I'm sorry. And the starting linebackers that day were DeQuell Jackson, L.J. Fort, and Craig Robertson.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. Okay? And I think Didn't they all have, or two of them had interceptions in the game?
They did.
You know, DeQuell return went for a touchdown.
It was a bizarre game.
And L.J. Ford had one and had another one in his hands that would have won the game in the last 18 seconds of the ball game, and then the Eagles scored on fourth and goal.
Brandon Whedon and the Browns just made like one more bad play than Michael Vick.
Just one.
Just one more. That's all it was. That's all it took.
Yeah, that's all it took. One point.
Sadly. All right, you had to bring back those memories.
Well, I mean, it shows you, though. I mean, look at how the linebacker thing, now you've got Dansby in there.
Oh,
you've
it's
got
evolved.
People like that, and now you've got, you know, this kid Kirksey. You know, Robertson's fighting probably where he should have been, fighting for a spot. Right. And I think you're right. Special teams is the immediate road for him to travel down to make the team.
Those are your Ohio Business Machine's hot topics of the day. We want to hear from you as we set the tone for this mandatory minicamp week here in Berea. 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. Tweet us at Browns_daily. Want to hear from you. We'll get into all those after further review at 1:45. Doug Deacon at 2 o'clock. Much more in front of you. And on this show, we're going to hear from the head coach of the Browns as well, Mike Pettine. Stick around for more of CBD on ESPN 850 WKNO. Makes me want to